Good afternoon. Welcome to Line One, your health connection on KSK Anchorage. I'm your host, Prentice Pemberton. Well, every new relationship begins when we fall for the other's representative. They are charming, funny, and crazy about you. Oxytocin gets flowing, and before you know it, you're in love. Lost in the ecstasy of the new relationship, you ignore the red flags, falling for the con. Concern turns to questioning, love turns to jealousy, and care turns to control. Suddenly, you find yourself isolated and alone, even questioning your own sanity and sense of reality. Why is it that so many people find themselves uttering the phrase, he or she wasn't like this until we moved in together or got married? How can we better recognize the games and manipulations? Are we just bad at reading people, or are high conflict people really good at playing on emotions and luring people in? Joining me today is high conflict expert Bill Eddy. On today's show, we will be discussing the traits of high conflict people and how you can identify the early warning signs that indicate you might be entering into a romantic relationship with a high conflict person. William or Bill Eddy is an attorney, therapist, and mediator, and the president of the High Conflict Institute in San Diego, California. He provides consultations and trainings about managing high conflict personalities to professionals, including attorneys, judges, mediators, therapists, and human resource professionals. He's presented in over 25 of the U.S. states and in Canada, Australia, France, and Sweden. He's on the part-time faculty at the Pepperdine University School of Law and on the part-time faculty of the National Judicial College. Mr. Eddy is also the author of several books that are really helpful when dealing with high conflict personalities. His books and other great resources and links are available on his website. That's highconflictinstitute.com. So his latest project, Dating Radar, Why Your Brain Says Yes to the One Who Will Make Your Life Hell, will be the focus of today's show. I want to remind folks that you can reach us locally on our local number, obviously, at 550-8433. Or if you're outside of Anchorage, you can call us toll-free at 1-888-353-5752. And the last way to reach us is to email your questions to line1@alaskapublic.org. Call early or send your question in early, and it's more likely that we can get you on the air instead of waiting until the last 10 minutes. So, Mr. Eddy, I appreciate you taking the time to join us today.
Thank you so much. I'm glad to be on the show with you.
This is actually our second time around. We did managing high conflict people before, mostly in workplace or in life where you run into them. So I'm excited to do this new one. I know we can't diagnose people who we don't know, and but I'm going to load this conversation up a little bit by asking, if you think our country is being run by high conflict people right now, you know, like in the summertime when I see something swimming in the water and it has feathers and webbed feet and it's quacking, I kind of think it might be a duck. So it seems to be a lot of animosity and anger in the air these days. And what's going on from a political perspective, real quick?
Well, it's really a personality pattern. And we see this in dating, in the workplace. We're seeing it in politics a lot now. And there's four characteristics. So I'm not going to diagnose anybody. But see if you notice these four characteristics in anybody. And there's several people that can fit this. First is a lot of all or nothing thinking. Problems and solutions are seen in this kind of black and white, all you, all me kind of way. Second thing is a tendency to unmanaged emotions, where emotions really just sidetrack people. Either they start yelling or they're just totally distracted by their emotions and they can't focus on tasks. The third is basically extreme behaviors, people that do things that 90% of people would never do, even if they were short on sleep or in a bad mood. But the fourth, and maybe the biggest, is a preoccupation with blaming others. And that has really grown in our national politics. If you think of our nation as a family, we're a family that's constantly pointing fingers at each other. So when you see those four characteristics, that's a high conflict person, and it's the It's the tip of the iceberg of a rigid pattern of behavior that's going to keep repeating and repeating. So if you see anybody with this, and I do want to mention that throughout history there's been Republicans and Democrats with this pattern, so it doesn't really know any particular political persuasion.
Yeah, and you've for folks who might be interested, you've written a couple of books you mentioned on the political. Can you mention those real quick, just for people who might be interested in reading a little bit more?
Sure. In 2012, my co-author, colleague Don Sapoznik, and I wrote a book called Splitting America, basically how politicians, super PACs, and the news media mirror high-conflict divorce. We're both divorce mediators, and we saw that pattern. This is 2012, so it wasn't about current politicians, but the dynamics are totally what we're seeing today. And I did write a second book a year ago called Trump Bubbles, The Dramatic Rise and Fall of High-Conflict Politicians, and I used six examples and basically talked about how there's an emotional rise, but then there's a fall because the bubble is out of touch with reality. So I wrote that a year ago. If that applies today, I'll let people make up their own minds.
It really is interesting that you talk about politics and the two parties as being like a high conflict divorce, and it's exactly like that. There is no, there doesn't seem to be a lot of rational thinking. People are unable to look at their own behavior. It's really just all about the other person and how bad they are in their ideas and what they're doing, and it's in the best interest of the children or the people, is their rallying cry, which. Often the people don't really necessarily even agree. So that sounds like a different show for a different day. Dating Radar. Why the impetus? What was the impetus for this book?
Well, what we saw, and when I say we, my colleague Megan Hunter is co-author on this book and also a co-founder of High Conflict Institute. And what we've been seeing over the last 10 years, because we're in our 10th year as High Conflict Institute, is that people have these patterns, but that if you don't know about the patterns, you don't know to be looking for them, you don't recognize them when they hit you in the face, and yet this could be very helpful, because if you see, like, the high conflict pattern and patterns, you can predict problems that are going to show up over the next few years, and you may choose to avoid those problems. We did a survey, an online survey about this, and we said if you knew, you know, 2 or 3 years into the relationship that it was going to, if you knew what you know now, at the beginning, would you have gotten into that relationship? And the majority of people said no. So it really is recognizing patterns, recognizing warning signs. And people, I think, are realizing now that's something we need to know. You can't just count on a pretty face or a nice, friendly date. There's a lot going on under the surface that you need to know.
Well, it's tricky because, as I mentioned in the opening, everybody's on their best behavior. Doors are being opened, and you can't go out and treat somebody rude and disrespectfully and expect for a second date, generally. So everybody's on their best behavior and trying to woo that person in. And how is it? It seems very easy to miss those things.
Absolutely. And what we see, and I mean, everybody's putting on their best behavior at the beginning of the dating process, but not everybody's going to turn into a high-conflict person. We're looking at 10 to 15% of people who may be a high-conflict person who just get into conflict and can't get out of it. They kind of have a inherently adversarial way of looking at all relationships, so it's a question of time before you start seeing that. But there are specific things that people can look for, and in the book we put them into really three categories. One is learning the warning signs of 5 high conflict personality patterns, because we see 5 patterns that cause the most difficulty over time. So recognizing those, knowing what to look for, that's one thing. A second is that there's what we call jamming your radar, that people with high conflict personalities will jam your radar by purposefully acting in ways that cover up their patterns. And thirdly, it's important to recognize your own blind spots, because we all have blind spots, and if you have particular areas of blind spots, that's where high conflict people often go. They kind of sense where your blind spots are, and they go there. So I can talk a lot about that. So those three things we found, categories of information we talk about in the book, Dating Radar.
Now, that book's not coming out until August, you said, of next year? Of this coming year?
Yes, August of this year, 2017. We're putting the finishing touches on the editing right now. So, but we've had a lot of interest in it, so we've got it out there. We've got the cover. People can actually pre-order it now. So I'll give you hints about it, but you won't have it in your hands for about, 5 months from now.
Yeah, I get a lot of people talking about relationships in the past and how they just didn't see it coming. So who are these, who are the high conflict people in the world? You mentioned 10% of the population. Are these defined, like, are we talking about personality disorders or a continuum or features of personality disorders? Maybe explain some of that, those five types for our listeners.
Sure. And they have personality patterns that are narrower patterns than most people have. So they repeat the same problematic behavior. Some have personality disorders, but some don't. And we're actually not that concerned about personality disorders as much as personality patterns. So, of course, popular today, people are talking about narcissistic personalities. But by and large, people don't really know the whole patterns that can go with that. So narcissistic personality patterns aren't just being self-absorbed. They're also treating other people as inferior and seeing themselves as superior. So in a dating relationship or a partner relationship, they want someone who will put a lot of their time into admiring them. And that gets old for most couples. I've done a lot of high-conflict divorces and helping people separate from narcissistic personality patterns. And they say, boy, it's like I could hardly breathe because there was no room for me in the relationship because the other person took all the emotional energy and air. So narcissistic personalities or high-conflict personalities. Then you've got borderline high-conflict personalities, people with wide mood swings. They'll really cling to you and then go into a rage against you. And when this first starts happening, people are shocked. And some people get out right away from dating them. But other people go, oh, it's a fluke, time and love, you know, we'll get through this. And, of course, a few years later, they realize, no, this is a pattern and it's not going to change. Then you've got paranoid personalities who are always suspicious. They don't trust you. They're checking up on you, you know, calling you at work. Who did you have lunch with today? Was it someone of the opposite sex? Those kinds of things. You've got histrionic personalities who are very dramatic and exaggerated and just intense emotional energy that can be exhausting. But worst of all, and I want to emphasize this because we see this so much, is the antisocial personalities or sociopaths. And they can be the most charming people in the world. And I've done a lot of consultations just in the last year or two with people saying, I don't know what's up with my husband or wife, but, you know, this kind of pattern of things, and we talk about it, and it's been this pattern. So I think this is one people really need to learn about and beware of, because they can cover it up with charm. But I'll save the jamming your radar things for a few minutes from now. That's the five personality patterns that we see and people talk about, a few years down the road, they're saying, I thought this would change, and it hasn't. I wish I had known to be looking out for this.
Right, or they just want their partner to get into counseling or just address these issues. One of the problems, though, with the high conflict person is that lack of insight. And can you talk a little bit about how that blocks really any hope of things changing?
Yeah, because the high conflict pattern, the all or nothing thinking, is they tend to think it's all the other person. So they don't have insight into themselves. They don't change their behavior because they don't think they need to change their behavior. But the reality is, any romantic relationship, you need to learn to adapt some to each other. That's part of the excitement of getting to know the other person, and some give and take, and over the months and eventually years, you want someone who will solve problems with you, not attack you for saying there's a problem, that you want to be a team against the problem. But people with high conflict personalities don't see it that way. They see it as the other person is the problem, but it doesn't mean they're going to leave you. They're going to spend the relationship pointing fingers at you and blaming you. Some of them will get out, but a lot of them will stay in this high conflict pattern. So because they don't have insight and self-reflection, and you can't make them, and don't tell someone you think they're a high conflict person, that really doesn't help. But because they don't change, they also don't seek counseling. So that's part of the problem right there.
Or they come in and they're very resistant. They're doing it because their kid is having problems, or their wife is, nagging them, or their husband is, doing something. They come in for somebody else. It's not their problem.
Right. And once they're there, the whole time is spent pointing fingers at the other people. So I was a therapist before I became a family lawyer and been doing mediation the whole time. But as a therapist, I'd work with couples, work with families, and the high conflict personalities just would not take responsibility for anything. Or they might mouth the words, but absolutely not follow them once they were out of the counseling office. So pretty quickly you get the idea, this is somebody that's not working on anything about themselves. And that's a big warning sign. You can find that out in the first year is, you're going to have some conflicts, have some problems, and if the person never takes responsibility, it's always all your fault. That's a big, big warning sign right there.
Yeah, I think it was your training. You told me that if I knew that I had been in the presence of an antisocial if I felt inadequate as a therapist, because they really work hard to make you question even your own judgment. For those who might be tuning in late, my guest is attorney, mediator, and social worker Bill Eddy. Our topic for today's show is dating radar, how to spot the early warning signs that indicate you might be getting involved in a relationship with the high conflict person. You can reach us with your questions or comments at our local phone number, which is 550-8433. That's 550-8433. Or you can call us toll-free at 1-888-353-5752. And our email address is lineone@alaskapublic.org. You got to spell out lineone at alaskapublic.org. All right. Yeah, you mentioned a little bit about, what was the thing we were going to come back to? Knowing yourself, I guess, and your own vulnerabilities.
Yeah,
why is that so important?
It's one of the big areas that we saw is, for example, someone would say, I grew up in an alcoholic family, and so I've always been really careful. I didn't want to hook up with someone who was, let's say they had a violently alcoholic parent, and so they were really careful. I don't want to hook up with a violently alcoholic partner, and so they end up with somebody who has a different addiction. Let's say it's a gambling addiction or or a sex addiction, a pornography addiction, internet porn, something like that. And it's like they're so focused over here to not have what's happening here that you miss signs that there's a problem over there. But also some of the other blind spots we saw was going through a grieving process, you know, the loss of a family member, maybe the loss of a relationship. And so you're feeling lonely, you're grieving, et cetera. That's a vulnerable time.
Right.
And high conflict people are good at sensing your vulnerability. And so they overdo the reassurance, what we call love bombing people, as they go, oh, you know, you're so fantastic, you know, and they overdo it. And if you're vulnerable, you're going to think, oh, this is super wonderful. When people are overdoing things, it's not super wonderful. It's a warning sign that they're going to overdo a lot of things and that what they're doing now may be fake and isn't who they really are. Because who people really are has somewhat of a balance to it. One of the survey respondents said if you meet someone across a crowded room and the sparks are flying and they're a 10 on the scale of 10, you know, run the other way. If you want someone who's really wonderful, get someone who's like a 7 or 8 on a scale of 1 to 10. You know, the 10s are people that may not really be real.
And yeah, we're not talking about just a 10 in the physical aspect of it. You're talking about a whole show of, you know, special achievements and overdoing the meeting every need that anybody ever had. Like he's perfect or she's perfect, right? That's the
right.
That's the part that you go, huh? Like this might not be what it is.
Yes, too good to be true is a warning sign.
Okay, that's number one. We'll get back to that, but I have a caller. Don, you're on the air with Mr. Eddie. Go ahead.
Yes, sir. I'm wondering what kind of a connection he can make between people with alcohol and drug problems. I've had some friends that were almost bragging that they were bipolar and didn't seem to want to do much of anything about controlling it outside of maybe popping some pills.
Yeah, we see with these personalities, we do mention a higher concern about substance abuse because often that's a way high-conflict people cope. The key question with substance abuse, and I used to work with substance abuse for many years, is the person in recovery? In other words, someone who has had an alcohol or drug problem, they say, I'm a recovering alcoholic, I'm a recovering addict, may be really learning some good skills, maybe someone that's really got a lot of good things going for them. It's the person that's in denial that they're an addict or alcoholic, and you start going, wait a minute, maybe my love can help this person stop drinking so much or stop using drugs so much. And that just doesn't work. That's one of the things we saw. People often have this fantasy that they can turn the other person around and turn the other person into a prince or something instead of a frog. And the reality is we don't have that power. So if you find yourself thinking, can I make this person a better person? I think I can. That's another warning sign. That thinking doesn't work. So in terms of alcohol and drugs, and bipolar also, and we do mention that in the book, if someone has a bipolar disorder and they're taking medications and they're checking in from time to time with a medical person, mental health person, they may be able to manage. But if they're not on meds and they're bipolar and they're proud of it, that's going to be a real potential problem.
So it's more about what the person seems to be showing for their desire and their efforts to make their own corrections and improve themselves.
You're absolutely right. That's the key to people who aren't high conflict. You know, 85% of people, 90% of people are open to self-awareness and self-improvement. And that's a good sign. These folks we find really aren't open to self-awareness and self-improvement. And maybe they give a few words like that, but if you get to know them over a few months or a year, and we always recommend check out a relationship at least a year before you commit, like moving in or getting married or having kids, to see is this person willing to work on themselves in any area or not. So good questions.
All right.
Thank you. Appreciate the answer. I'm a veteran in two marriages, and I think you're on target.
All right. Thank you, Don. I appreciate the phone call. I want to make a point of clarification here because we're talking about two separate things. One is high conflict people, and then the other one is people with mental health disorders, substance abuse disorders. Those two things don't necessarily go hand in hand. Is that correct? The high conflict
right.
person takes that to a different level.
Yeah, the key thing about high conflict people, and we were starting to touch on that here, is that they don't reflect on themselves and they don't try to change, and they are in denial that they have a problem. And so when someone has a mental health problem like bipolar disorder or substance abuse, and they're willing to work on it to see what will help me be a happier person, what can I do differently? That's a completely different ballpark. That's a really positive thing. But some people have both. We have some high-conflict people, also bipolar disorder, high-conflict people with substance abuse. And if they're resistant to change, that's a big warning sign. If you've got someone who you can see has a problem and they're not willing to deal with it, don't fall for the idea that you can fix them. Time and love and you cannot fix a high-conflict person.
No. In fact, you'll just continue to feed it. So some more of the warning signs. How do we know when we're getting into one of these things? What are the things we should be looking for as far as what they call the red flags?
Well, there's some things that we found in terms of what we put in the category jamming your radar, that when people are trying to cover up that they may have a high conflict personality, they often come on strong. We found four areas that were particularly common from this survey that we did. And by the way, if people want to do this survey, we're open for about two or three more weeks as we're finishing up our edits. It's a Survey Monkey survey, so I could give you that address in
a little
bit. Yeah,
go ahead. You're
but
still looking for
things,
data. Huh?
Yeah?
You're still looking for data?
Sure, for another two or three weeks.
All right. How would they participate in that?
Okay. It's an online, it's a Survey Monkey thing. So it's surveymonkey.com/r, the letter R, the small form of it, then another forward slash, and then dating radar as one word with a capital D and a capital R.
Can they find that? Can they find that on your
/r/datingradar?
Can they find that on your website?
Yeah, if they go to our website, they should be able to find a link for that. And our website, of course, is highconflictinstitute.com.
Yeah, that's available on our show page. If you go to Alaska Public Media and click on Line 1 or today's show, you will get a link to Bill's website, highconflictinstitute.com. And it's, as I mentioned, got lots of really good articles and information and great books that if we have some time, I'd like to just mention. But right now we are at our halfway point in our show. So we're going to go ahead and take a short break. I want to remind folks you're listening to Line 1, your health connection on KSKA Anchorage. My guest today is attorney, mediator, social worker, Bill Eddy. Our topic for today's show is dating radar, how to tell if you might be getting involved with a high-conflict person. If you have a question for Mr. Eddy or a comment about today's topic, maybe your own story about a high-conflict relationship or how you got out of one, our local number is 550-8433. That's 550-8433. And our toll-free number from anywhere you might be calling is 1-888-888-888. 353-5752. And our email address is line1@alaskapublic.org. After this short break, we'll continue our conversation with Bill Eddy. I'm Prentice Pemberton.
You're listening to Line 1 from Alaska Public Media. The program repeats tonight at 8 p.m. on KSKA Anchorage and will not be taking phone calls. You can find Line 1 on iTunes or listen at alaskapublic.org.
Welcome back to Line 1, your health connection on KSK Anchorage. I'm your co-host, Prentice Pemberton. If you're just joining us, my guest today is attorney, mediator, and social worker Bill Eddy. Our topic for today's show is dating radar, how to spot the early warning signs that indicate you might be getting involved in a relationship with a high-conflict person. Remember, you can email your questions or comments about today's topic to line1@alaskapublic.org. You can call us locally at 550-8433 or call us toll-free at 1-888-353-5752. Please remember the show repeats tonight at 9 p.m., so if you're listening to this on Monday evening, actually, I think it's at 8 now. I have an old copy. So at 8 p.m., if you're listening to this on Monday evening, you'll be hearing a taped recording, and we won't be accepting phone calls. I want to take just a second to promote an event tonight at South High School. It's one that any of you who listen to this show very often know that I have a thing in my brain about cell phones and electronics and kids. So there's a showing of a documentary film entitled Screenagers. The movie lasts for 68 minutes, and then I'm going to lead a discussion group with parents and kids after the movie. So it's open to kids and or their families, parents and kids. It's open to the public. It's at South High School from 7 to 9. There's a $10 donation to pay for the licensing and all the stuff goes with it. I haven't seen the movie, but I've heard it's really good, and I'm looking forward to some discussion about that and seeing what that's all about. So South High School tonight, 7 o'clock. All right, Bill, we were discussing right before the break, we were talking about some of the more warning signs, and you had mentioned four things, so let's pick up there.
Yeah, well, there's four ways that we noticed from the survey that people reported particularly high on the jamming your radar, essentially. Of course, number one is charm. Charm may be wonderful. It can be very appealing, having all the attention and love and focus of somebody. But if you're registering a 10 on the charm scale, that's a big warning sign. If you've got someone who's charming like a 7 or 8, maybe that's a nice thing. But the people that are over the top are a problem, and we noticed this. A lot of people talked about that they started out, the person was extremely charming. Second was fake compatibility, that the person tries to impress you with how much their interests are like your interests, how much you have in common. It's like, oh, amazing, you're into that musician, or you're into that type of movie or something. That's amazing because I am too. And many people talked about this fake compatibility, that the person took the shape of what they thought you would be looking for. And so depending on which personalities, there were some different aspects of that. A third was an overt sexuality, was really kind of a seductive air very quickly in the relationship. And I might mention that speed of intimacy seems to be one of the characteristics in many of these cases. Not only speed of intimacy, but sometimes speed of getting engaged and getting married. People, you know, getting married 30 days after they meet each other. But there's this kind of rush. And we really encourage people to wait a year before making a big commitment, because some of this high conflict stuff doesn't show up for 3 or 6 or 9 months, but usually within a year, you know. And the fourth characteristic was a kind of promises of protectiveness. You know, I'm going to take care of you. I'll be your knight in shining armor, or I'll be your maiden in whatever distress you're in. I will care for you. I will, you know, heal your wounds and take care of you. And so that kind of goes back to the earlier part I was mentioning about knowing your own blind spots. Because if you're vulnerable to someone that says, I will take care of you, then you're going to slip into, you have a higher risk of slipping into a relationship with these folks, because that's one of the things they're always looking for.
So some people, it sounds like, are very vulnerable, because I have a lot of, you know, in my experience, a lot of clients say, why do I keep picking these guys? Why do I keep getting the same? They seem so nice. They do, you know, it's so good on, you know, at the surface, but I keep getting it over and over. Are they vulnerable to that? Do high conflict people prey on that?
Yeah, and there's a variety of aspects of that. But I think when someone says, why do I keep picking the wrong people, we really encourage them to get some counseling, because there's some blind spots that they have that they can't see that they might start seeing. For example, there's a lot of people really look for a spark and excitement right away. You know, chemistry is everything at the beginning of a relationship. And that's one of the things that we noticed was present in the majority of these situations where they turned out to be high conflict people. So if you're feeling you have to have that spark, that excitement, that chemistry that's intense, you're going to pick a lot of high conflict people. So those are the kinds of things. How do you get to know someone? It's fun to have that, but if you're counting on that, you're screening out a lot of reasonable people. There's a lot of couples that grew close to each other that did just great, and a lot of high-conflict couples that started with this spark and then it blew up, you know, a year or 3 years later.
All right, I want to get back to that a little bit, but let's go to the phones. We have Caroline. You're on the air with Mr. Eddie.
Yes, hi. My apologies. I was busy with some work and just now tuned in about 10 minutes ago. A couple of things. I wanted to ask the question about teenagers. I understand from the person on the phone bank that you have something coming up for them. But I know that teenagers, girls, are ashamed to admit that someone's beating them. And I wondered about that. And also the idea that does somebody who is a conflict person, does that person realize what they're doing, or do they kind of mold into that based upon who they end up with?
Let me start with the second question, because I think it's very important right away to make clear most high-conflict people are not aware to the depth that they're high-conflict people. They may realize I get into trouble and I irritate people, but they really seem to lack this self-awareness. And in many ways, it seems to be two factors influence a lot of this. Partly, to some extent, some people are born this way. They just have one of these personality kind of tendencies. But the other is life experience can make someone become more high conflict and difficult, or less high conflict and more flexible. So a lot of times you're talking with people, you're dealing with people who don't really consciously understand how harmful they're being to themselves as well as their partner, their dating partner, et cetera. So it's good to know, or helpful to know, a lot of this is unconscious. Now, the first question for teenage girls, I'm not sure if I caught it completely, about being manipulated.
Well, it had to do with being ashamed of what's happening to them, and they don't want to talk to anybody about it.
Yes, yes. And that's something I think, you know, definitely more and more education about that, because a sense of shame about oneself really makes one vulnerable, more vulnerable to getting into relationships with high conflict people. And I do want to mention, we're seeing, you know, a lot of dating stuff. We've got kids 14 years old, 13 years old going through these dynamics. And it's so important that they are encouraged to talk and also know. We're trying to write this book, so we're not trying to. We've written it. We're in the final editing stages, so that high school kids can benefit from this, because they particularly fall for charm and love bombing, where people just come on so strong, and also that with the internet, you know, people can really seem much more charming on the internet than they're going to be, or they're completely fake, and we talk about that in the book too. People that have totally, it's a fake picture, it's a fake biography, all of that. So I think educating teenagers is so important, and I think we're going to need to do that a lot more, and hopefully this book will help with that.
Yeah, sir, the myth of the one true love, I would imagine that that helps feed the idea of when you fall for somebody, that's it forevermore.
Right. And one thing we found is that a lot of people talked about a spark. When they met the high conflict person, there was this spark, and they plunge into a relationship right away. And then a year later, they figured out, whoa, this is the wrong place to be. So there's several myths we saw. So, yes, that there's the one true love. The other is that I can change you and make you into a better person. Another is that pure time and love will make someone become a better person. All of these are myths that are part of our culture. We get them from music, we get them from movies, we get them from TV dramas, and it's hard to fight that. And that's why I think we really have to educate teenagers, because today they're more easily manipulated than 20 years, 40 years, 60 years ago, because the internet and the ability people have to alter who they are. So I think it's a very important question, yes.
Thank you.
Thank you for the call, Caroline.
Thank you.
If you're just tuning in, my guest today is attorney, mediator, and social worker, high-conflict expert Bill Eddy. Our topic for today's show is dating radar. How do you know if you're dating a high-conflict person? You can reach us with your questions or comments in three ways. The local phone number is 550-8433. You can call us toll-free at 1-888-353-5752. And the last way to participate is by emailing your questions to line1@alaskapublic.org. Okay, so speaking of emails, I got a couple here I'd like to kind of get to real quick. I'll read the first one. What does one do if married to a high-conflict woman I am unwilling to leave? Leaving her destitute is not in my character. The guilt I would feel is too great, but the stress on me now is affecting my own health. So I guess the question is, how does one stay married to a high conflict person?
Well, I think by learning things to do to manage the relationship, it always may have some frustration in it. But there are many people that make that decision, and we don't tell people they should or shouldn't split up with a partner. But what we've seen is that it really helps to learn, first of all, get counseling for yourself, to learn how to feel strong about who you are, and that getting blamed a lot by a partner, because that's what high conflict people do, that it's not about you. And so it's like, there she goes again, rather than, oh, what have I done? I must be doing everything wrong. So I think part of it is boosting your own self-esteem, but also setting limits and being able to say, no, I'm not willing to do such and such. or I'm going to end this conversation if you can't stop screaming. Things like that, because these are common characteristics of high conflict people. So I think managing the relationship, and at on our website, highconflictinstitute.com, we have several books, and one of them may be particularly helpful. It's called It's All Your Fault, 12 Tips for Managing People Who Blame Others for Everything, and that's a characteristic of high conflict people. So, but this book might also be of interest because I think it helps people boost their own self-esteem to realize I'm not such a bad person, even though my partner says I am, and that's so important. So I think you know, people do make that decision to stay. Often it is for the kids, and many people in our survey said, I'm staying because of the kids, or I waited to get out longer than I might have because of the kids. So these are all choices. We don't tell people what to do, but we do want to help people have a sense of self-esteem, even if they're in a high-conflict relationship.
I think that's really good advice to get your own counselor. Typically, a high conflict person will not like that you're going to get your own counseling. But to understand that it's not your fault, it's not your responsibility. You don't have to hook in all the time on every battle, because that's part of the draw for a high conflict person. They tend to thrive on that, is my experience, and look for it.
Yeah. And that's exactly one of the big things in counseling, is teaching people to choose your battles. And with high conflict people, there's more battles than you need to engage with.
But it doesn't mean allowing yourself to be run over. You can be assertive, as you said, have clear boundaries, what's okay with you, what's not okay with you. And then that puts it back on that person to make some adjustments to your limits. All right.
Right.
I do have another email I want to get to. And this goes a little bit to later on. If you've missed the warning signs of high conflict people, and how do you divorce from a high conflict person? This could be, it was another show, but perhaps we'll have you back on in the future to do a whole show on this. But a high conflict person who you have children with, and those who tends to use the children to manipulate the relationship and to punish the ex?
Well, the easiest answer is there's another book that I wrote several years ago called Splitting, Protecting Yourself While Divorcing Someone with Borderline or Narcissistic Personality Disorder. They don't have to have the disorder, but if it's a difficult situation, there's a lot of information in there, how to get ready, how to deal with legal stuff, dealing with lawyers, and how to deal with things after the split up, even after the decisions are made, because often conflict does continue, but you can manage it better and better. So I would encourage that book. And then I would encourage getting the book Dating Radar, because after someone does divorce a high conflict person, they need to be aware so they don't marry another high conflict person unintentionally.
Right. You can take one out and plug another one in, and you got the same basket of problems.
Exactly.
So if somebody is seeing some of these warning signs, how should they address it? Should you just run for the hills like your hairs are on fire? Or should you look at it as maybe it's just a person being a goofy, you know, insecure or jealous or their own stuff? How do you address this behavior in a way that you believe this other person is hearing you? Or is their response to your concerns important at all?
Well, I think it's important to be yourself. And it's almost kind of a test of the other person's ability to have flexible thinking, managed emotions, moderate behavior. Because if you're being yourself and they're being a jerk, now's the time to find that out. You know, the idea of over this first year is don't pretend that you're not irritable sometimes or that certain behaviors don't bother you. So be willing to be assertive and speak up and be yourself. And if the other person doesn't like that, that's a sign you may, for getting out. But another thing is we do encourage, again, this year long of time, and often it's helpful to say, honey, you know, we've got some conflicts, let's get some couples counseling. And high conflict people, by and large, as we said earlier on, resist that. They say, I don't have a problem, you have a problem. And so test that out. Find out, would you be willing to go to counseling if we had a problem? And there's a lot of couples I've dealt with where I think one person was a high conflict person, and they would never, ever go to counseling. And now that the divorce is here, then they may say, oh, I'll go now.
Oh, right.
So
yeah.
That's a test. See if they'll go.
That is a good test, because I had a guy come in one time and he said, you know, my wife says I'm a narcissist, and so I want to come in here and find out if I'm a narcissist because I have this tendency and that tendency. And I got a whole bunch of, the character traits of that. He was really confident, successful, good-looking guy. And I said, the fact that you are asking the question probably indicates that you're not actually a narcissist. Because that level of ability to look at oneself and ask that question indicates some insight.
Absolutely. Yes, and that's something that people should be aware of. If you don't see any signs of anything you ever need to work on, then maybe you've got a personality problem. But if you're wondering, gee, what about this? What about that? Maybe I should be a little less this and more of that. That's a sign that you're not likely to be a high conflict person and not likely to have a personality disorder. Self-awareness and change is a good thing.
Are there some warning signs, some big ones that should be considered like deal breakers? If you see these, get out. Or versus other ones that are more, like I said, just people being insecure or goofy or, out of character. What are the big ones?
The biggest one I would say is domestic violence. So I once was talking with a friend, and she said, I was on my first date with this guy, and he came with, he had a lot of skills, professional guy, and good looking, and made good money, and all this stuff. And somewhere in the middle of the evening, we're walking somewhere, and I said something, and then he gave me a slap on my butt and kind of laughed. But it wasn't funny. It was like he disagreed with me on that. And I said, what's that? And he says, you were just being silly with what you said. That's absurd what you said. And she says, yeah, but you hit me. I says, oh, don't worry about that. It was nothing. That's a big, big warning sign. And she did get out. That was the first and last date with that person. But when people get kind of seduced into tolerating little bits of highly aggressive, inappropriate behavior, getting your credit card number and buying something with it without your permission. Also, not showing up, missing being an hour or two late for things consistently. There may be something else going on in this person's life that's much more important than you are. But I'd say domestic violence and a high level of inconsistency would be two of the big warning signs, biggest to just deal breakers. Don't even waste time here, because people don't change as much as we'd like to. And that's a myth that holds people in relationships with high conflict people when they're dating. They go, well, this is going to get better. And assume what you see is what you're going to get.
And it's particularly difficult to change if someone does not have the insight to see that there's something to change. So that's the added piece there. All right, so things like checking the phone a lot, calling you when they don't know where you are, showing up randomly at places like at work without warning, with flowers. I mean, those may seem like concern, but really they're about control.
Right. And that's an area we saw with the blind spots, is mistaking warning signs for love, like stalking you, finding out things about you that you're kind of shocked. How did you find that out? They did deep research on you, and then they're telling you about it as if they're going to try to get control over you. So A lot of things are like that, you know, and people that show up at work because they want to see, are you talking too nicely with people of the opposite sex? Those aren't signs of love. Those are signs of control, as you said.
Yeah, jealousy and insecurity, big ones. All right, so how does somebody get out real quick from underneath this if they see these signs early and they want to just get away? What's the best way to say adios without cranking up the volume on this?
Well, the first thing is don't crank up the volume getting into the relationship too loud, too fast.
Go
in
slow.
Other words, we really do suggest caution, take your time, get to know somebody. For a lot of people said delay sex, you know, that the longer you can delay sex, the more you're getting the real person. We know that's not going to go over well with some people, so we're not, you know, saying you've got to do that. But be aware of taking your time to get to know the person as well as testing things. But in terms of getting out, I keep coming back to counseling. You may want to talk to a counselor about what kind of personality you're dealing with. If you're dealing with someone, let's say an antisocial personality, and you want to just drop them cold, you may get a real blowback that's going to be harmful to your reputation. Maybe they're going to start stalking you, things like that. So you want to do it gently in general and respectfully. I think that it's often helpful to meet with the person with somebody else around. If it's a real extreme case, have your lawyer tell them goodbye. If there's been some real violence or something like that, so you're not vulnerable again. But mostly, I think, just in person is say, look, you know, I need a little more time for myself right now. I need some time to think. And then get back to him and say, you know, I've thought about it more, and I think this isn't a good idea. So you kind of drop the person slowly, but not too slowly, and get good advice on that. Find out who you're dealing with before you do something that feeds into their rage and willingness to give you a hard time.
All right. Well, that I usually ask for people to wrap things up, but that's a nice wrap up for what to look for. We are out of time. I appreciate, Bill, you for joining us today. It was a really good conversation. I think an important one. People can get more information about that when your book comes out and on your website. So thanks again for joining me.
My pleasure.
All right. If you'd like to continue today's conversation, you can join KSKA on Facebook. You can find that link on our website. That's alaskapublic.org. Well, traumatic brain injury can be difficult to diagnose and predict the outcome. On the next program, Drs. Woodard and Jerry York discuss how new neuroradiologic techniques are helping understand and manage TBI and other neurological diseases. Remember, there's a documentary film entitled Screenagers Tonight at South High School. From 7 to 9, $10 donation. We're going to watch a movie and then talk about teenagers and phones this evening at South High. I'll be helping to facilitate that tonight. So Evan Erickson is our web editor and audio engineer for today's show. I want to remind listeners that you can listen to all our past shows in the Line 1 archives. Just go to alaskapublic.org and click on the link to our show page. Once again, for Dr. Woodard and myself, thanks for taking the time to listen today. I'm Prentice Pemberton. Hope you have a great day.
Line 1 is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and do not reflect the underwriters or KSKA. Learn more about Line 1 and listen online at alaskapublic.org. Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.